This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, January 11th, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly. So glad you could join me. And of course, I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Good evening. Glad to be here.
Yes, tonight we're going to be talking about channeling and spirit possession, that is, understanding what they are. You know, what do you make of these things? Well, are they real? Are they not real? Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some evidence one way or another. And we are going to exorcise that demon tonight.
So. And, of course, anybody who wants to call in, the number is at the top of the screen. Love to hear from you. It's open discussion. Anybody in the chat room, please feel free to join in, and we'll exorcise more of you.
Yeah, we're going to have a group exorcism tonight. I'm sorry. I know last week I promised I would try to be possessed tonight, but I wasn't able to get there. So it's just going to be straight Doug tonight. But we do welcome everybody. Glad you could join us, whether you're live or listening to the archive. Of course, Metaphysical Universe is a service of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. We explore science, spirituality. We empower the human spirit, and that's what it's all about. Metaphysics is the study of consciousness and existence, and it's such a broad field. So if you'd like to call in, the number, as Dr. Vicki said, is on your screen. Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls. We'd love to hear from you if you've got a perspective on the topics tonight. You know, we're open to it. We'll listen. And you can have a part in it.
You know, I have to say this just very recently. I had another client in a session who was expressing her fear of demons and very confused about some of the reading she's been doing. And I thought, boy, there's somebody who should listen to our show tonight, you know, after we got talking about it. But so can we please just start off this show by saying, I and Doug, I can speak for you, I think, do not believe in demons as defined by most religions.
That's correct.
Let's
you know,
just start
we
that
all
off
have
there.
Our demons, but they're not the same thing. Same thing, only different. Okay.
Yeah.
So tonight we're going to start off with the topic of channeling, and then we'll get into spirit possession in the latter part of the show. Channeling, most people know what it is. You know, you're basically serving a channeler, that is, would basically serve as a conduit, as a medium between the spirit world and us, humanity. And they channel messages. And there's different types of channeling, or should I say there are different messages that come. Anytime a spirit medium speaks for a spirit, or a spirit is speaking through a spirit medium, that's considered channeling. And it can be a powerful tool for anomalous research, if fascinating, if nothing else. If you are in the paranormal community, you've undoubtedly heard of Hans Holzer. And he, of course, passed away here a few years ago, but he... you know, he was, prolific as a writer. I mean, he had over 100 books. I read several of them, and it was fascinating, some of his stories. But he always used a trance medium on his investigations, and that's pretty much it. I mean, he'd go in with a tape recorder and a trance medium. He used several, and they would go into a trance. They knew nothing about the place, and they would, you know, connect with whatever spirit was there trying to speak. And once the trance medium was done, or the session was over, he or she could not remember anything from the session. So, and it was interesting because he got some really fascinating information through these trance mediums that he was able to later verify. Are we on the air? I'm getting messages that y'all can't hear me.
I have sound. Perhaps it's John. Eric says he's hearing everything all right. So
okay, so we're good. So the thing that I wanted to point out is with paranormal or anomalous research, you know, having a good, trusted, proven trance medium on your team can be an interesting thing. It can perhaps yield more information. And that's what channeling is about. Now, the other side of that coin is some of the messages that have come through channelers. And Vicki, you break in anytime you want to come in on that.
I'm saving up. I'm saving it.
You know, and there have been many channelers, and of course people have their views on this, and some of the more well-known channelers, you know, there's Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham, Seth, who was channeled by,
Jane Roberts.
Jane Roberts. Ramtha, who channeled Ramtha?
I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
But there's a lot more than just these three, but those are just some of the more well-known ones. And, you know, I'm going to put it out there, those kinds of channeling, for me, at least for the several that I've heard, I have a huge issue with it because it just strikes me as messages with no real meat, you know, very shallow messages, and it's reminiscent of religious faith for me. There's no meat, there's no solutions, it's just sweetie stuff, and the something to tickle people's ears. You know, you got to look at the psychological aspect of everything, and this includes channeling and the messages that are channeled. Now, there might be some people out there that I'm unaware of that are channeling some good stuff. That's cool, fine, I'll accept that. The ones I've heard, it's just been, you know, we're here, we're going to protect you, you got to connect with each other, or you're going to die. You know, I mean, you got to come together. It's that stuff. And there's even some who are the doomsday sayers, and of course, you know my position on that. I run from that. That's just baloney. But go ahead, Vicki.
Well, I think just the flip side of this, I think that there is a purpose served in that people do open their minds when they hear of people who are trans channelers in these ways. So I give credit with that for that. I think there is some value in these very popular so-called entities or personalities that come through these channelers. And I think the message generally is of hopefulness or encouragement, but it usually does come with the watch out and be careful. And my thing is, from my point of view, I don't really understand where the applications to daily life are, which is what I look for. Mm-hmm. So the moment I hear some more philosophical jargon, I think, well, I could probably go read a book and it would make more sense. But that's just my view. I know a lot of people like it. There's a great appeal to even the notion of spirits coming through. It just seems to be evidence or proof to people, when maybe that's just their view of it, because it's not evidence to me, because somebody can be acting as well. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying these people are. I'm just saying that it can be. The drama of it tends to, put my hair up a little bit. I have, in my earlier years, done trans-channeling, and because I like to be conscious for things, I didn't like it. I don't like
having...
Well,
that's the problem with most psychics, with most mediums. They don't like to give up that control. And we'll talk about that. I'll let you finish your
What I kind of did is, you know, in my own subconscious, unconscious, higher conscious, whatever you want to call it, I just said, hey, look, guys, I'll make a deal with you. I'm happy to, you know, be open and hear to the best of my ability, but I got to be awake for this deal because there's got to be something in it for me. I need to learn. So that's not to say when I am in sessions or doing readings for people, I remember everything I say, but I am conscious enough to get the gist or the experience. So for me, my reality is that there is always entities or, you know, whether it's the spirit realm or other many worlds that are speaking to us all the time. I believe that we are in multiple levels of realities and beings. So I think people generally are channeling, whether they know it or not, I'm more conscious of it in my work, and my deal is that I prefer to stay awake for it. I don't like voids of time. It just doesn't appeal to me. I don't like the thought of anybody taking over my body. It's just not a thing. I certainly appreciate anyone who does. Because they are real, genuine people that just for a moment they move over, kind of, if you think of it in this way, moving over in their body and sharing space with an entity who can do some enormously good work for people. So it's very valid.
So, Vicki, what you're trying to tell us is that you're a control freak?
Totally.
Oh, good.
I make no bones about it. I like to control my own mind. So I don't want to control anybody else. I just like to know what's going on in my own mind, who I'm sharing space with, and I like to be awake for it. Mm. So that's the deal.
Well, there's some various or varying levels of being dialed in, you know, and I have not had the opportunity to actually use a full trance medium, somebody who just goes into a complete trance and doesn't remember anything. And I'm trying to put this in perspective here. I've been with a number of mediums who get what I call dialed in. They're dialed in, and they are fully conscious, but they're dialed into this frequency, kind of like it's like tuned in. And when questions are asked of them, the ones I've been with have not so much been a spirit speaking through this person, but this psychic medium is relaying the messages. And when they're dialed in, they respond almost instantly to questions,
yeah,
as if they were, you know, the spirit was speaking through them, more of
and
a relay.
I can relate to that I can relate to that a lot more than I can what I call performance mediums or performance trance channelers. That I think that there is this, I know what's not my own voice. I know my mind well enough to know that is not from me. And this is why I'm forever from the position of know thyself, because then you know what voices are not yours in your head. You know? And that's really critical to know.
You need
otherwise,
to know which
medication
ones are yours. Yeah. Yeah.
You know? This is actually, although we don't need to go into this at length, but a lot of people who are diagnosed as schizophrenics, I would have to say, it's my opinion, that they have rather a low filter between the realities or between the worlds. And I think that what is necessary, perhaps in a lot of cases, a medication to ground somebody into this reality. So I think that there is this risk of going too far. And I think this is what concerns me about people who enter into this world of, you know, transmediumship or transchanneling, that you can kind of lose sight of yourself there. You can kind of become a little bit dissociated or mm-hmm. Not connected. And so it's really important to stay grounded and know who you are. That's a critical point.
And that leads into, again, why so many mediums would like to do the trance work, but are reluctant because of the losing control thing. And so one of the things that many of the trance mediums who do it, they use a control. And what I mean by that is it's a spirit guide, a spirit advisor, or somebody they're connected with, their spirit guide, to use the common words. And their spirit guide will act as a control, as a gatekeeper of sorts. And they will manage or monitor, you know, the connection. And so, in fact, that was something that the mediums who worked with Hans Holzer, they used a control. So, you know, that's an important thing, too. It's up to the medium to understand who that control is, and the arrangement should be worked out for it.
And just so people know this, there can be more than one. You know, I mean, a lot of mediums have more than one so-called guide, or, you know, some the controller, as you call it. You can have, some have one that's a healer that would come through, and somebody else might have, you know, again, serve other purposes. So there can be more than one.
Yeah.
So just so we know that.
So channeling, you know, is it real? Well, yeah, it can be real. I've seen it, you know, pretty near. I haven't seen a full channeler. I haven't seen somebody who you know, channels a certain entity or group of entities, a collective. But it can be real. The thing to be careful of, you know, with anything in the world, and especially in anomalous research, you've got to be grounded. You've got to remain objective. Just look at the message. To me, most of these messages from these channeled groups or entities, just, you know, what are they really doing for humanity? And that's a question. Perhaps they're doing something. But the other thing that really, the reason that I can't wrap my brain around some of these channelers is that the messages are just too shallow. They don't give us tools to make the world a better place or to make our lives a better place. And it reminds me so much of people just, you know, they want to believe. And that's a trait of human nature. We want to believe. We want to have this hope. And we need, or not, so many people need to know that somebody's out there, whether it's God or a spirit or whoever, that's going to take care of them, that's going to comfort them, that's going to make, you know, make things different, going to bring about changes. And that's not, honestly, it's not healthy. You know, we have everything we need inside of us to drive our life, to create our own reality. So we have to look within and not rely on that. It takes a lot of strength, and it takes a lot of evolution, a lot of evolvement, a lot of enlightenment to understand that you're it, and everything you need is within you. You've got it within. That's where to look, not outside of you.
I think part of the attraction to the spirit world is the need for a validation at the core, that no other human being might know that. I mean, everybody likes to feel acknowledged, recognized, and, you know, we're a social being. So we want to feel like somebody or something knows who we are. And I think that's also the attraction. As much as people like to have their secrets and be afraid of that, they're always quite wowed when they feel validated. And that's all part of the psychic energy that's floating around us all the time. So, you know, we think we can keep secrets, and then we want validation. So it's kind of a conflict that I think we're in, you know, because society or the world would say, protect yourself, you know, be fearful, protect yourself. At the same time, we want people to know who we are. So it's safer, I think, in many ways to go to the spirit world as opposed to go to people. And but really, it exists within yourself, and everybody can key in. Everybody can do that. Just, you know, I think that some are just more attuned to it than others. I would just like to add in here that no matter how much somebody appears to be a trans-channeler, their own soul is still connected. It's not unlike various states of hypnosis, you know, where, and there's different levels of hypnotic states, and, you know, you can have positive and negative hallucinations, you can, you know, it goes on and on. So you don't completely dismiss or leave your body entirely, or you'd be dead, because then the soul would disconnect from the body. But there is a moving over, so your higher consciousness is still connected with whoever that is who is trans-channeling. And so I call it that moving over. It's just like giving more space, energy space, to the entity that's coming through. And the more space that that entity takes up, of course, the more the individual has to move over, hence why they don't remember. They're there. They just don't entirely remember. And I would suggest that in, you know, separate from the channeling experience, that if one were to go into a deep state of hypnosis and be facilitated, they could remember. So
there's a question in the chat room. Do you think that the attraction to the spirit world is due to our own spirit being aware of the spirit world itself?
Well, that's where we're most connected. I mean, we're spirits before we come to a body, and that's the familiar zone. I often say, like, I don't relate to spirits so much as my guides or my angels. They're just my friends. So, you know, they were my friends before I got here, and they'll be my friends when I leave. So there's that we all have that innate connection and desire to reconnect in that, because that's where we get our greatest, I believe, our greatest validation to existence.
So, and to ahead. our live listeners in the chat room, if you've got perspectives or questions on channeling and in a little bit on possession, we'd love to hear them. And if you want to call in, you have a perspective or an experience you want to share, we'd love to hear it. The number is there on your screen, 714-459-3973. So, you know, like anything else, remain grounded. And I got to tell you this one example of a couple years ago, and it was from a psychic in Australia. Perhaps you remember Blossom Goodchild, and she had made some predictions. And this is an interesting thing, and there's a part of it that puzzles me, that I'm wondering what's going on here. She had made a prediction that I think it was October 14th or 15th or something like that of 08 or 09, or I don't know, it was 2 or 3 years ago, that there was going to be this huge flying saucer spaceship hovering over Alabama, I think it was. Anyway, the southern United States, and made reference of this event being in the southern hemisphere, which, you know, the United States is not in the southern hemisphere. And so there was some different predictions that everybody would see it. And so, you know, it went kind of viral on the net, and everybody was talking about it, at least in the paranormal community and others. And there were YouTube videos and on and on. Well, of course, the day came and nothing happened. And, you know, I kind of felt sorry for her, because she, and this is something that I respected about her, she at least had the maturity, the enlightenment, the self-awareness to make a YouTube video and apologize. And I could just sense with her, she was as blown away about it as anyone, because what had happened with her is that these entities who were speaking through her, whoever her particular entity is, had made a number of predictions that all came true, and given her information that was dead on, and this kind of had been happening for a while. So when they said, you know, there's just going to be this huge spaceship, alien ship over Alabama, over the southern United States, well, you know, she'd had all this good information up to that point, and so she trusted them. And then nothing happened. And I could just see it in her. She's just trying, what happened here? I mean, gosh, they gave me good information up to this point, and then they give me this outlandish thing, and I'm, okay, I'll go with it. And she gets basically screwed, you know, her reputation. And she apologized for them.
When was the Phoenix Light stuff?
That was way before. That was in 90, what was it, 96?
Okay.
It was the 90s.
So she was predicting something similar to the Phoenix Light.
No, she was predicting a huge, several hundred mile wide craft over the southern United States. It was pretty big. Of course, you know, nobody in my circle ever gave it any credence. But the point is, she had her number of followers. The point that I'm trying to make, so this is the example. She was receiving these messages, channeling, and she, as far as I know, she still has her website, still channeling these entities. But the problem is, the reputation, the credibility went down the toilet completely, in my opinion. But at least she apologized. That was very good of her. The point is that, you know, what was responsible for that? Why all the good information and then suddenly no good information? I don't have an answer for it. But I'm just putting it out there, especially to those of you who might be anomalous researchers. You know, when we've batted this concept around before, some kind of a trickster entity, and I don't know much about it. I know Jacques Vallée talked about that, and when I was doing my other radio program, Paranexus Universe, Grant and I talked about it a number of times, my co-host for that show, and it's interesting because when you boil it all down, when you boil the anomalous research community or the area of anomalous research all down, it boils down to fear or confusion. I mean, if your people, there's so many of these events that result in fear on the part of the witnesses or the participants. If you're a researcher, it boils down to confusion, because one event will tell you or lead you to believe one conclusion, and another similar event will have a, lead you to a completely opposite conclusion, so you're confused. Fear and confusion. And that's another a couple of the traits that you want to look for in these channeled messages. Do they promote fear? Do they promote confusion?
If maybe they do, just changed their mind.
Well,
and they didn't tell her, or she wasn't thinking they would change their mind, and so she wasn't paying attention. There could be, I think, a myriad of reasons as to why she's right nine times and not right on the tenth one. And that's a shame, actually, because somebody who is pretty good at this, trusting her entity and who's coming through.
Well,
and but we're all human, and we assume and we translate and get it the best that we can. So,
of course, you know, and there is that translation. We've talked about that on previous shows, and that's a given. We there's no psychic that's 100% accurate all the time. It is subject to their interpretation, their own experiences, and so forth. But the big thing with any psychic, with any medium, with any channeler, do their messages promote fear? Do they promote confusion? And if they do, you know, you got to just run. If they don't have anything solid, anything beneficial,
or judgmental.
Yeah,
anything judgmental. Not unlike a religion, and I've taken issue with some of these very popular entities coming through. The minute I hear someone having a judgment over a certain condition on Earth, like a, you know, whether it's homosexuality or something, I just shut it off because it's I don't know where that's coming from.
You had related an experience.
Well, you know, back in the 80s when Ramtha was first, you know, surfacing, I was intently listening, and I had borrowed a bunch of tapes. And, you know, I'm very interested in this and hearing what Ramtha is saying. And then suddenly there was this comment about homosexuality being a deviance. And I went, what? You know, and that's, I just thought that was wrong on so many levels that I just shut it off. And I've paid little or no attention to many of these channelers since. Now, again, I don't want to diminish the value for some people, but I would, like you, you know, encourage people to have caution about what they're listening to and understand that so much is in the translator themselves, you know, because you're in a shared space, in a shared consciousness. And I have one of the oddest experiences for me is actually hearing spirits speak in other languages that I have no idea what they're talking about. So I have to ask them to give me pictures or other things because I'm lousy with languages. But I have, in the company of people who speak in their language, I'll just start writing down things that, does this make sense to you? Because it makes no sense to me. You know, how letters are put together and their words, and sometimes it's running letters. I've done this a lot, actually, for Cree-speaking people, where the spirits that come through only speak the Cree language. And I don't get it, so I just start writing. And actually, it's fascinating to me, because I kind of share that space, and I just, wow, that's cool. I wish I knew what they were talking about. But then I get the feeling of what that might be about. But I can't presume to know because I'm a lousy translator. I can just write it down and give it to somebody and say, hey, if this means something to you, that's a good thing. So my task, I think, is to get out of the way. That I hope there's a purpose to what's taking place and to get out of the way of it.
You mentioned writing, and that's actually another form of channeling is automatic writing, and there are people who do that. And I had the opportunity to witness that one time. It was kind of a spontaneous event. We were doing a table-tipping seance in Clewiston, Florida, and I believe that's where we were at. And no, it was somewhere else. Anyway, we were there doing the table-tipping, and there was an anomalous researcher there who had been in doing her research for quite some time, many years, and this was her first table tipping, and she was a little more psychically attuned than she realized, and some entity from her late teenage years came through, a boyfriend who had passed away, and anyway, so she was kind of dialed in, as I had referred to earlier, and she was asking for a piece of paper and a pen, and we grabbed something real quick, and she starts writing, and she wasn't even looking at what she was doing, and as far as I could tell, she wasn't faking it. It was just, in fact, she was pretty, you know, shocked at it. She was kind of, it was a whole new experience for her that she didn't know how to compartmentalize. She didn't know how to file it, you know, so she wrote out this entity's name, forget what it was. It's in the course, and I described this in the degree program in a couple of the courses, one on psychic development, another one on paranormal research. But it was fascinating to watch this, and there are people who will do that. And of course, many books have been written that are channeled in this manner. There are many out there. So another form of it.
I think sometimes when people are doodling, mm-hmm. they're doodling, and they are not paying attention to what they're doodling, there could be like some messages in there. Because, again, it's kind of that altered state where not being alone. So any number of things can happen. John just mentioned a question here I want to just address while we're on this. We were talking earlier about shared consciousness, and he asks, could it be that sometimes when someone drifts off into a trance without knowing it, could that explain some abduction-related causations like lost time? Sure, that's another topic. You might have something to inject there, Doug, but I'm not going to say that when people drift off into a trance that automatically, you know, means to say there's a spirit sharing your space.
Right.
But I think that it could lend to what we could call traveling telepath. You know, there's some
astral
yeah. projections and a number of other things that could relate to that. That is trance-like, but not necessarily trance-channeling. I have some friends who live in the mountains who, back in the bush, and one day they just came across this Tibetan monk. Now, we're in the Rocky Mountains. Hello. What's a Tibetan monk doing there in the middle of nowhere? You know, some of my adopted family end up in this conversation with this fellow, and then they happened to turn their back, stir the fire, and looked, and he was gone. Now, during that conversation, they asked him, what are you doing here? And this monk said, I'm just checking it out. I'm just, you know, visiting and checking it out. And that's as far as they could get. And they had sense enough to know that this fellow, likely, it was a projection of his consciousness projected to another part of the world, and he was just checking it out. And I believe this is possible. You know, it's absolutely possible. So there's any number of reasons for the trance-like state. It depends whether or not you're conscious of it. Eric's asking another question. Unless you had something to add in there, Doug.
No, go ahead.
You know, Eric's asking a question, what the opinion is of spirit channeling versus scrying. Well, that's just another vehicle. It's another tool. It's altering your state, altering your consciousness, sharing space, and, of course, that's just another focus.
Mm-hmm.
You can use numbers, you can use cards, you can use teacups, crystal balls, anything that focuses your intent, that alters the state that you're in, allows room for channeling.
And all trance mediums have a method of altering their state to go into that trance. So scrying, yeah. Whether, you know, with or without a psychomantium, is a way of altering your state of mind. Meditation is another method. And that they're all kind of the same thing, only different. So, I mean, that's what self-hypnosis is. Hypnosis, it's all kind of the same thing, only different. It can alter your state. The thing, there's another question from Anisha. What language do spirits communicate in with human beings? I mean, how do they know how to communicate with a person in the first language? You know, everybody has those experiences in their own language. Some EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, have been in different languages. Typically, they're not. Typically, they're in the language of the person. So, you know, I don't know how to answer that. I don't know how they know. I don't know if they have the ability to speak in any language. That would sound reasonable to me if they would have that. I don't know that answer. I don't know if you do.
The only thing that I might suggest is we don't always channel in words. It's we get messages through very many other mediums, whether it's pictures or feelings or, you know, smells or senses and things. I think often things are given to me in a way that I can relate them to. It's like a metaphor. Because if suddenly I think of something that, oh, I knew somebody back in, oh, yeah, okay, that's what you're trying to tell me. It's a what they're trying to tell me is kind of like something else that I can relate to, but still apply it to the situation that I'm attending. So I think there's many, many ways that messages can come through. I think a full trance medium that, you know, obviously appears to lose their consciousness, they have been known to speak in other languages.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, if they're driven by the spirit, then yeah. And Eric mentions images for scrying, and, of course, that's the point of scrying. You know, I mean, if you're adept at that kind of psychic phenomena, then you're probably going to see some things. You know, whether it's coming through the mirror or just through your mind, you know, who knows. Jericho Ibanez, by the way, now Dr. Jericho Ibanez.
Yes.
He's graduated recently.
He has a question there. It's a good one, too. Jericho's asking, is there any particular age or gender that channeling or mediumship can happen, and, you know, whether the intent is for on purpose or not? That's what I'm gathering from Jericho's question. You know, that's a very good question, because young children are very sensitive and very open to these things, which is a really important reason why keeping kids grounded into this reality in those early ages. But, you know, Jericho, what I have found is the teenage years is when they're most sensitive to such occurrences as traveling, as channeling. Now, people can certainly tell me otherwise. It's just my view of this and what I've observed over the last 40 years. The other thing I will say to you, however, is anytime anybody has indulged in drugs or, you know, altered states, you know, whether it's extreme alcohol or any kinds of drugs, it alters the consciousness, and people have experienced channeling types of, you know, events. And one of the first things I ask young people when they've had these really profound psychic experiences, I have to ask the question, have you recently been doing any kinds of drugs? What kinds of drugs, and have you been drinking? And not because I think that it's a psychosis. It's because very often the shield or this protective mechanism that we have in our soul consciousness is kind of thinned out, so to speak, and you're more susceptible. And I think this is a really good transition into how we talk next about possessions.
Yes. Yeah, so to sum up what we talked about channeling, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, but it's imperative that we retain our critical thinking skills in all things. And that, of course, includes channeling, and it includes possession. So is possession real? I'm going to say that it is my contention that most people are possessed. And I'm not joking. I'm not joking here.
I'm actually serious. I love it. Okay.
Most people are possessed. You know, let's talk about it. Are they possessed by spirits? No. Is it possible for one human being to be possessed by another human being? The answer is absolutely. And there are so many examples. One that comes to mind is, you know, is the woman who's beaten by her boyfriend or whoever, and she won't press charges. Tell me, who has possessed that woman? Who owns that woman? Well, it's the boyfriend or the husband, whoever's abusing her. It's the same thing. Whenever we allow boundary violations, who's possessed us? Well, it's that other person. And so most people are possessed, just not by spirit. So does spirit possession actually work, or does it actually happen? That's a controversial area. Now, one thing I want to mention, whether spirit possession exists or not, we certainly know that possession by other human beings exists and is prolific throughout humanity. Remember this. Whenever you are self-possessed...
We had a slight void in sound, so if you could repeat that last sentence.
Whether spirit possession exists or not, which is controversial, most people are possessed by other people. But here's the kicker, and this is what I want to leave. If you are self-possessed, you cannot become possessed by anyone or anything else. That is the secret. And I cannot emphasize that enough. If you take away nothing else from this show or any other show, remember this, if you are self-possessed, you cannot become possessed by anyone else. That it means taking your power back, knowing who you are, knowing why you are who you are, being complete within yourself. So that having been said, let's talk about spirit possession. Is it possible? Does it happen? Well, of course, depends on who you ask. There's a lot of religionists who believe that it happens, and there's many of these religionists who do these exorcisms and seem to have some results, seem to be able to do it. So if spirit possession doesn't exist, how are they able to exorcise those demons? Well, let's look at the whole thing. And let me lay some foundation here for this whole topic, and then we can kind of go into details. In order to believe in, well, I'm not going to go there yet, spirit possession, could anything else account for it? In my opinion, yes. If spirit possession was possible, and especially by demons, because that's who the religionists usually say are possessing people, you know, I don't believe in demons. I think they were a religious construct from the Middle Ages when they didn't know how to explain things. You know, you have to have faith to believe in demons or the devil or anything like that. I don't. So, you know, it's hard for me to buy into that. Here's the thing. And give me a second to collect my thoughts here because I want to lay this foundation. If spirit possession was possible, and not all that hard for spirits or demons or whoever, wouldn't we see it rampant around the planet? I mean, if spirits could take people over and possess them, well, you know, why aren't they doing more of it? You know, that, and so where is it? That's one big issue I have with it. But can we explain it any other way? Earlier in the program, Vicki mentioned about schizophrenia. And, of course, if you go to the mental ward or mental hospital, you see a lot of folks with a lot of mental disorders, and they can range all over the place, seeing things, hearing things, all kinds of things like that. So we could almost say that they're possessed, and some have offered that. Yeah, you know, these people who are mentally ill, they're not really mentally ill, they're just possessed. Well, can't, you know, I don't even know what to say about that. The point is can people without mental illness be possessed by spirits? Is there another explanation? And I think that there is. In hypnosis, there's a particular approach to hypnosis, which is called parts therapy. This was developed by Charles Tibbetts many decades ago and really written a lot about by his mentee, Roy Hunter, no relation to Vicki, to my knowledge. But it's parts therapy, and basically it goes like this. Have you ever said, gee, part of me wants to do this, but a part of me wants to do that? You know, does that mean that we're schizophrenic? No, of course not. It just means we have mixed feelings on something. Well, in hypnosis, an effective approach to helping some people is to address that part of them that is doing whatever the behavior is that is undesirable. And in hypnosis, you address that part, you bring them to the front, you ask for that part of the person to come forward. Sometimes they'll even give themselves a name or that part of them a name, and you try to merge these parts. You try to blend them, and you try to deplete that energy. Well, in my hypothesis here, people who are under a lot of stress, psychological stress, especially stress, it can be a lot of different types of stress. They might, disconnect a little bit, or part of them might disconnect. They might begin behaving in a way that's just not like them. I mean, how often do we do that? We get stressed out. We might bark at somebody, yell at somebody. Well, is that our normal behavior? No, but we're stressed out. Well, some folks seem to have, the ability, or they tend to go into a deeper aspect of that. They begin behaving unlike themselves. And I'd like to recount an example of a story. Now, this story comes directly from Gaurav Tiwari. Now, Gaurav is he is the India rep for Paranexus. He's also a student at IMHS and a great guy and a very grounded researcher. He relates a story. In fact, this is in his blog. And if you go to paranexus.org and just look for the blog, you'll find Gaurav's blog there on spirit possession. Great story. Essentially, there was a young woman in her 20s, and she was seemingly possessed by something. She was talking in a deep voice. She wanted blood. She was yelling obscenities. She wanted blood to drink. She asked for that. She was yelling obscenities, and Gaurav got there, and he began to talk with her, and he had some prior knowledge. Apparently, some years prior, about 8 years, I believe it was, prior to this, this young woman was approached by a young man. He wanted to go out. He wanted to date her. He wanted to get to know her, and she rejected him. And he ended up killing himself, and this was in her late teens. Well, this is 8 years later now, and she apparently really took that hard. I mean, she felt like she was responsible for his death, and it had just slowly simmered for all these years. And here she was, and she didn't know how to deal with it, and so she's now acting out. I mean, they had her tied to the bed and everything. She was, I don't think her head was spinning, and I don't think she was, puke and pee soup or anything, but she was really possessed. So Gaurav talked with her and reasoned with her, and she was apparently possessed by this young man's spirit, and he wanted to get everybody. He was just angry. And he reasoned with this alleged spirit and said if you really loved her, you would let her get on with her life. Well, anyway, he went about this type of reasoning, and it worked. Suddenly, no more deep voice, no more requests for a glass of blood, and no more obscenities, and the girl was fine. It was a psychological response to stress, to guilt, to a tough thing that she'd gone through. And this is what can happen with so many of these possession stories. They can be, and usually are, in my opinion, psychological in nature. I have not seen any example of a possession that could not be explained that way. So that's the foundation.
And I think that this is a perfect example, too, of anyone who is channeling, so to speak, and there's a psychological disorder within yourself that causes other energies and confusions and inner conflicts to occur, which, again, is why it's so important to stay really grounded and centered in who you are. And this poor girl, obviously, I mean, she didn't have help during a very critical time before mm-hmm. this blew right. up into this, and which is part of the work that you do and I do, Doug. We work with people in trauma or stress very often, and it's critical to address the feelings and how the psychologies can get confused. We have all kinds of memory that file into the brain, and sometimes they have big collisions. and it can distort a reality, it can distort a truth. And next thing you know, we're fixated or focused on these things. And I think to some degree it's happened to everyone. This is exorcism or the possessions in this way, it's just extreme cases. So I'm totally with you. I think most of it is easily managed and addressed if you know what you're doing. So
yeah.
I wouldn't recommend people to start doing exorcisms.
Well, not those kind, and not in those ways like some of the religionists do it, because it can be brutal, these people. If you look at it, I could argue that the work that we do as spiritual counselors, coaches, and even as anomalous researchers, when we are coaching the client, I could argue that we are performing exorcisms of a type.
Absolutely.
Because when we assist people as counselors, coaches, whatever, when we assist people to change unhealthy behavior into healthy behavior, we are, in a sense, exercising those demons. Actually, it's the person doing it, but we all have those issues of one type or another that we need to address and deal with. And so I would love to have an opportunity to handle a, quote, spirit-possessed person, because I think it would be very, very effective, and it wouldn't so much involve, you know, screaming, "Come out in the name of Jesus," over and over again. And speaking of that little phrase, I got to tell you a story. This actually happened to me. This was back in my religious days. I was only about, 22, maybe 20, right in 22, 23. And at that point in my life, I was electronic technician. I had a job repairing office equipment, and so I would go to various places where, you know, I had a broken machine. So I got a call from this one church. It was a fundamentalist Pentecostal church, and so I go in there, and it's, the office is dark. You know, there's windows, so it's kind of lit up, but it's no lights on, nobody's there, and I'm trying to think. I went to the copier, which was there. I mean, the door was open. I knew people were around. There was just nobody in the office. And so I begin working on the copier. And it dawns on me, in fact, before I even started, I'm just remembering this now, before I even started working on the copier, I went down the hallway to see if there was anybody in the offices there. And there was one door that was closed. This was the door of the office of the you know, pastor there. And there was a note on the door, and I grabbed the note, and it said, "Do not disturb, prayer meeting in session." So I'd walked up to it, saw the note, read it, and then it dawned on me I was hearing stuff from the other side of that room. And this is what I was hearing: "Come out in the name of Jesus, come out in the name of Jesus, in the name of Jesus, come out in the name of Jesus," just over and over and over again. And as this pastor was yelling this, you know, I would hear this, you know, that the kind of growls and stuff, and this guy saying, "Come out in the name of Jesus." I mean, they were performing this exorcism. That was funny. I mean, I was young and naive and religiously blinded, and I kind of skedaddled out of there.
I'd skedaddle too. I'd be more afraid of the people than whatever demon was possessing somebody.
Well,
that is a good story.
That guy, you know, was another story. But anyway, folks, the point is, if you're self-possessed, it cannot become possessed by anyone or anything else. And that goes to taking your power back. In my opinion, and I've talked about this many times, in my opinion, the solution for a plethora of issues, if not all of them, is to simply reclaim your power. Take your power back. It works for the victim of the bully on the schoolyard. It works for haunting phenomena. It works for abductions. I've seen it. Phenomena, whether they're real or not, it works. It works for bad relationships. It works for office or work-related workplace issues, you know, when you have an overbearing boss or whatever. When you take your power back, you understand that you're it. You're enough. And you respect yourself enough to not allow anyone else or anything else to cross your boundaries.
You know, Catherine has a question here. Would that channeling is a reality or always just a state of mind? And Catherine, the only way I can answer this is that it is a state of mind. So whether that's channeling or any number of experiences that we go through in daily life. These are our views, therefore our realities. And I'm quite happy to keep my reality until another better one comes along. So, that is a state of mind.
And I want to address a comment in the chat room. I have an on-off-again severe problem with anxiety, and it sure feels like someone else's spirit is possessing me when I seemingly can't control the anxiety. It's a part of me I am learning to contend with over time. I just want to recommend that you talk to somebody, a spiritual counselor, a competent spiritual counselor, a hypnotist, hypnotherapist, whatever is in your area. You know, these are things in your mind that are trying to come out, trying to manifest. You're not crazy. It's just stuff. And we all have stuff to address. We all have to touch it. And when I say touch it, I mean when you use hypnosis or counseling or whatever to go in and address those issues, to look at those things, and to when a competent counselor or hypnotherapist can draw you out and go from one thing to another without leading you, but just draw you out, kind of drop that the wells of water in you, so to speak. It touches those issues, it touches those memories, it touches those parts of your consciousness, and when it does, it depletes the energy. You know, it depletes it. It takes it away. That's why I believe in so many of these past life regressions that are done like a fear. And I've mentioned this type of thing before, too. If I have a fear of water, you know, I go into hypnosis. My mind creates a scenario where in a past life I died by drowning. When I touch that with hypnosis by going and addressing it, it depletes that energy. Whether it was a past life or not doesn't matter. The point is that we touch it, it depletes. And so you have to get some help to touch those memories, to touch those fears, touch those issues, to address those issues. It's like we all have our demons, right? And many times we just don't know what they are. There's a sensitizing event that perhaps happened way back when. We don't even recall it consciously. And that's one of the areas that hypnosis can help with.
If I can add in something else here, that when I have worked with my own issues of anxiety or panic attacks, I have tended to deal with social phobia myself. One of the first things you can do when you're having an anxiety attack, you know it's coming on, focus on the solar plexus, calm your guts, calm the feeling, because that's where it all happens first. So as you're learning about what your trigger points are and how that's building, calm the stomach and you have less chance of those brain chemicals firing off. So it's just a helpful little tip.
And that's a good tip. You know, breathe, you know, take deep breaths and just cancel, take a micro meditation moment. We really appreciate everybody's attention tonight, your time. Thanks for joining us. Hope this was of value to you. If you have ideas for other topics, we'd love to hear them. Next week, we are going to be talking about chasing and catching your life dreams. We're going to have a special guest, David Blender, who is a hypnotherapist in Illinois and also a doctoral candidate at IMHS. So we'll look forward to having David on the program.
Great discussion tonight, Doug. Had a great time.
Yes. We also appreciate those with your questions in the chat room and the comments and everything. And that's all I got. Hope you have a great week. We look forward to seeing you next week. And please tell your friends. And if you are interested in a metaphysical education, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Love to see you there.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great week. Good night.